We're going to talk about flourishing. God intends for you to become the best version of you. That's His intention for you. It won't look like anybody else. It'll be wonderful. God's more concerned with you reaching your full potential as a human being than you are. And He is guiding that process all the time. He has many, many tools at His disposal, and He's not in a hurry. That can be kind of frustrating, but there's a mountain on the way to your personal summit. He is very patient. He will never give up. Jesus made quite staggering promises about His ability to transform human lives into a new kind of life. In John 7, there's a feast going on in Jerusalem. There are three big feasts in Israel every year. One of them was called the Feast of the Tabernacles. It was very much like our Thanksgiving, when they would thank God for His goodness and abundance, that they had enough provision to live. And Jesus went up to Jerusalem for that feast. The highlight was a big parade at the end of that feast every year. The priests would go down to the Pool of Siloam and draw out water in a golden pitcher and lead a procession up to the Temple Mount. There was so much joy in that parade, so much shouting, praising, that the rabbis used to say, "The one who does not know the joy of tabernacles does not know joy." And the priest would lead them all the way up to the temple and shout out, "With joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation." And then they would do an extravagant thing. He would pour that water out on the dry ground. They were desert people. They did not waste water. But this was a reminder that they served a God who one day brought water out of a rock for His people. And everybody would cheer, looking forward to the day that God would send them a Messiah. And it was on that day, maybe at that very moment, when the crowd was gathered together, that we're told in John 7, verse 37, on the last and greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink." To be thirsty means that you're discontent, that you're not happy about everything, that you have unsatisfied longings. Jesus is saying, "All you dissatisfied people, come to me. Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink." And He doesn't just say, "Then you'll be satisfied." He says in John 7, the next two verses, "Whoever believes in me, as Scripture said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." By this He meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in Him were later to receive. Up to that time, the Spirit had not yet been given, since Jesus had not yet been glorified. Not only will you be satisfied, you will become a source of life to the rest of humanity, to other people. Living water will flow from deep within you. Jesus is talking about your very core, that place way down deep inside you that feels empty or hollow in the middle of the night, that place where the butterflies fly. He uses the word koralia, from which we get our word colitis. That's how far down He's talking about. That sickness that often is related, it's often related to stress and tension and problems way down deep inside us. Well, out of your belly, Jesus says, will flow energy and hope and joy and strength without you having to manufacture it or fake it or hype it. Over and over, He describes this a little later on in John, in the 10th chapter, different metaphor, same reality. It talks about His people. He says they're sheep, and His desire for them is to have life. And He says this, "The thief comes," and our world works this way, "to steal and to kill and to destroy." Then He says, "But I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." That's the great word for salvation, just life. And to be alive, to have life to the full, with abundance. Then you go through the New Testament when you see these promises of life, of transformation, of rivers of living water. Peter says, for example, "Though you have not seen Him, you love Him and are filled with inexpressible and glorious joy." Is that you this morning? You haven't seen Jesus, but you love him, and knowing Jesus, seeing Jesus figuratively fills you with joy. That's why we celebrate at Christmas. He came. It's joyful that Jesus came and he saves. He says in 1 Peter 1, verse 22, you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth so that you have sincere love for each other. I love doing communion with you and looking around the building as we're taking communion and seeing you hug each other and shake each other's hands and greet each other and smile at each other. You have sincere love for the brethren, for your sisters and brothers in Christ, for each other. God's plan for you is that you become fully mature in Christ. Now, right now, there are kind of two versions of you, isn't there? There's the you God is calling you to be, and then there's the you that currently exists. And how many of you would say that there's a gap between the you God is calling you to be and the you that you are today? I don't know about you. I am very aware of that gap in my own life. And the problem is that we think we have to close the gap. So many people think that they can close the gap if they just try harder. So many people beat themselves up because they think the problem is they are not being heroic enough in their spiritual effort. Some people will make New Year's resolutions to close that gap best they can. They're going to read their Bible more. They're going to pray more. They're going to do all these good things that they haven't been doing like they think they should be doing. I see this all the time, the spiritual version of making New Year's resolutions. I'll read another book. I'll listen to another talk. I'll learn some new disciplines. I'll serve more. I'll work harder. I'll try to be nicer to people in my life. Nothing wrong with any of that. And you hear about someone who gets up at 4 a.m. to pray, and you feel guilty because you think you don't pray enough, and you resolve to do that too, even though you are not a morning person. Even though at 4 a.m. you're dazed and confused and grumpy and groggy, and nobody wants to be around you at 4 a.m, even Jesus doesn't want to be around you at 4 a.m. But you think, you know, well, that's hard, and it's exhausting, it's miserable, and I don't like doing it, so it must be God's will for my life. It must be good for me. It must be spiritual. And you try to do it maybe around the beginning of the year, and you do it for a few days, impressive, or a few weeks, or even a month, but not forever, and eventually you stop, and then you feel guilty because you stopped. Then when the guilt gets high enough, then you start doing something else. And that cycle, guilt, start to do something, doesn't work, get tired, stop doing it, guilt builds back up. And your secret is you're getting tired. And I don't just mean physically tired, I mean tired in your soul. Or you think, I have to rededicate my life. Or I have to switch some other kind of spiritual tradition. This one's not doing it anymore. Or I have to just fake it and make everybody think I'm living that kind of life. Or I'm just going to secretly give up and hope I get to heaven when I die anyway. So here's the question. What if Jesus was right? What if he really meant what he said about there being rivers of living water available and that they could flow out of you? What if such a life is possible for you? And you don't get there by trying harder or trying a few more verses to talk about who's at work and what's going on. You try to rev yourself up into more commitment. Paul says in Philippians 1 verse 6, for I'm confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it through to completion. God began doing a good work in you. Paul says this to the same church in Philippi, chapter 2, verse 12. He says, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. It's God who's at work. Revelation 22, verse 1 and 2. as our text. Then the angel showed me the river, the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, down the middle of the great street of the city. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Jesus offers an abundant life, a life of continual refreshment by living water, so much refreshment that it overflows from within us to give life to the world around us. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18, "And we all, who with unveiled faces," no mask, no hiding, no pretense, unveiled faces, "we all contemplate the Lord's glory." We don't have to be hidden behind a rock like Moses was, so you can just see, you know, the very tip of the end of the skirt of God's glory. We don't have to be that way. We can contemplate the Lord's glory because of Jesus. We are being transformed into His image with ever-increasing glory. Rivers of water are flowing within us, living water, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. It doesn't come from me. It doesn't come from you. It doesn't come from any effort on my part. It comes from Jesus. Now, here's what happens, I think, for a lot of people. When people first come to God, they first come to faith, they realize, I've got a problem. There's a gap. Here's this holy, perfect God, and here is me as I currently am right now. And there's a gap between God and me. It's a gap of sin. There's all kinds of mess in there, this gap between me and God. And I can't seem to bridge that gap. And the question is, can I ever bridge that gap through my effort? You know the answer. It's a 50-50 shot, yes or no question. Can I ever bridge that gap through my own effort? No. Only God can bridge the gap. And what does God give to bridge the gap? He gives grace. Okay, the only way from here to here is grace, and He did that through Jesus. A lot of us have received that gift, and if you haven't, I hope you will receive it today. You can do it this morning. But then here is what often happens for people. I become a Christian, but I realize there's still kind of a gap. Only now the gap is between the me that God wants me to be, sanctified me, and the me as I currently exist. There's this gap between the life God promises and the life I'm living right now. And again, that gap, you can sum it up in one word. The word is sin. Question is, can I bridge this gap through human effort? The answer is no. I cannot. But the problem a lot of people have is they think, well, I get saved by grace, but then I guess I have to live by human effort. I guess I have to get from here to here through what I'm doing. I'm going to work really hard, and I'm going to make my way across that gap, or I'm going to stay where I need to be by working really hard, and all that's going to produce in you is frustration and exhaustion. I've seen it in Christians before who grew up in the same tradition I grew up in. Went to see a man, the first little church I preached for, there was a man who used to be a deacon that wouldn't come to church anymore, so I went to see him in his house and asked him what's going on, and he said, I just gave up. I couldn't do it. I was just too tired. And I just decided maybe some other people can do it, but I just can't do it. Well, just as you get saved by grace, so are we invited to live by grace every day. Not because we become perfect, but because God continually pours grace into our lives. Paul says in Romans 5, verse 2, that we stand in grace. You're standing there. I'm standing there in grace. When I first come to God, I may experience grace primarily as forgiveness. And of course, grace is forgiveness, but it's even more than that. Grace is more than forgiveness. God was a gracious God before anyone ever sinned. Creation itself was an act of grace. And you personally were graced with life from God when you were exactly as innocent as a newborn baby. The grace of God. God's plan is for you to live every day by grace, in grace, standing in grace, to learn to run on grace, to wake up in grace, to receive life and energy as a gift, grace from Him. Sometimes we think people who are sinners need grace, but saints don't need grace anymore. I love what Dallas Willard used to say about it. He said, saints burn way more grace than sinners ever could. I get that. Saints run on it. It's like rocket fuel. It's like food. That's the idea of grace. Grace isn't just something that you need when you sin. Grace is what we are tended to live in all the time. Grace is the generosity of God, and once I become a Christian, I experience it in many ways. Guidance, peace, fellowship, even power. Power to do what I otherwise could never do. The picture Jesus uses for this life in the Spirit is a picture of a river. Rivers of living water, and by this he means the Spirit, John says. Now, a river is a common metaphor in the Scriptures. It's used about 150 times in the Old and New Testament. Most often as an image of spiritual life and grace, a river. There's a good reason for this. Have you ever been to Israel? Israel, especially in the southern part of the country around Jerusalem, is an arid country. These were desert people. You drive down to Jericho from Jerusalem, you drive through a place that there's nothing growing on the ground. No vegetation. It is completely dry. That's what their country is like. These were desert people. Like almost all ancient cultures, had a primarily agrarian economy. And if the winter rains don't come and produce something on the ground, then their goats and sheep can't graze and they can't raise crops and they don't have any food. They're going to die. Israel didn't have rivers. Now, the Jordan River ran down one side, but in Israel itself, they had what they call wadis. If you go over there, wadi is like a dry gulch. When the winter rains come, when the rainy season comes, then water may flow down the wadi. A river is grace. A river is a gift. A river is life. We don't know much about the Garden of Eden, but we do know this. A river runs through it. At the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis 2 starts with a river watering the garden, flowing through Eden. The Israelites reading that would think what a good God God was to send them water. Then there's this ache, there's this dream for the river. Psalm 46, verse 6 says, there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God. That is life. Because where the river flows, life flourishes. Where the river dries up, life dies. We are not our own handiwork. And our longing for God is compared to profound thirstiness. We sang the words this morning from Psalm 42, verse 1. As a deer pants for the water, so my soul pants for you, O God. Now, when you hear those words, don't think of these deer we have in Kentucky. We get about 48 inches of rainfall a year on average here in Kentucky. And there are lakes, rivers, and creeks all over the state. That's not the picture. This is the desert. And if this creature does not find water, it will die. All the wadis have dried up. This is desperation as a deer pants for water. So my soul pants for you. Oh God, it's just saying, psalmist is saying, this is our human condition. Because I was made, you were made to run on God, on being in a relationship with God. God is our oasis, and everything else is a mirage. We live in a world with lots of mirages. If you get more money, more success, more applause, more attractiveness, then that's what life is all about, right? It's a desert. But this is you really coming to life. If I'm cut off from the Spirit of God. It means a life of unsatisfied desire, spiritual dryness, emotional blankness, moral failure, internal death. There's a river at the beginning of the Bible. There's a river at the very end of the Bible. Revelation 22, beautiful vision of what it'll be like when God sets everything right. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal. Because, you know, we live in a polluted world. But the river of the water of life is as clear as crystal, flowing down from the throne of God and of the Lamb, because it's God that makes us alive, running down the middle of the great street of the city, right there where you can access it, right in the middle of the street of the city. Now, this is the community. This is a community that's flourishing because there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life, that great tree back from Genesis. Eden, in Revelation 22, Eden has been restored. The Garden of Eden is there again, and a river runs through it. Both sides of the river, because it has full access. And all those roots are running into all that water, and the tree is bearing 12 crops of fruit. Why 12? Well, when the Israelites saw the number 12, what did they think of? 12 tribes, the people of God. When Christians see the number 12, what do we think of? 12 apostles, the people of God. And so that's why there are 24 elders, by the way, in Revelation 4 and 5, around the throne of God. 12 for the 12 tribes, 12 for the 12 apostles, the people of God. Now all the people of God will flourish. The tree of life bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. What kind of tree yields fruit every month? There is no tree that yields fruit every month. This is not botany now. This is about more than just pears or apples or something. This is the generosity of God. This is the gracious, overflowing grace of God who gives far more than we could ever imagine. It yields its crop every month. Now, the people of God are going to flourish. And then the next phrase just kind of grabs my heartstrings and maybe yours. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Let me ask you a question this morning. Can the nations use a little healing? Could the nations of the Middle East use a little healing today? Could Ukraine use a little healing? Could Washington, D.C. use a little healing? Could Louisville, Kentucky use a little healing? The leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. What if God's plan is for his world to flourish, not just in the new creation in eternity, but even today? Today, the world receives a foretaste of glory divine. So he sends his Spirit, his grace, this river to the tree of life to bear fruit, and then we're to be the leaves. We are to be the leaves which are for the healing of the nations. And Jesus says, this is your life. From Genesis to Revelation, from the moment that you were born to eternity, this is your life, and a crystal river runs all the way through it. Here is God. Here is grace. Every breath you take, every thought you think, every nerve impulse that causes your body to move the way that you intend it to move, it's all grace. And here is the river all the time. Your life, and a river runs through it. God longs for it to flourish, for your life to flourish more than you do. This is true of a tree. It's receiving nourishment from beyond itself, and so are we. It's true of you. Your job is not to make yourself flourish. Your job, you cannot make yourself grow. The question is, how do I remove the barriers that keep growth from happening as God intends? And this is where spiritual growth begins. It's not like I have to get my financial life in shape. I probably ought to get my physical body in shape. I probably ought to get my spiritual life in shape by doing this activity or that activity. It starts by getting clear about what life looks like when you're actually living in the flow of the Spirit. To ask yourself, what are those activities that open me up to the Spirit? What are those activities that shut me off from the Spirit? You know them. It's about living deeply connected to God, actually waking up and running off a source of fuel that's something bigger than your own desires or ideas or ability to manage anxiety. It's about living with so much joy that sin begins to look less tempting. It's about living in the flow of grace, not needing to pretend and manage others' impressions of you because of honesty about your own brokenness, while also secure in trusting God's acceptance. You don't have to be afraid anymore. You've been freed up to like and love people with the same measure of grace that you've received. You can listen, confront, and forgive. You can serve others without diminishing yourself. I'm going to repeat that. You can serve others without diminishing yourself. I love what the Apostle John says about Jesus and why he could wash his disciples' feet. How could the Son of the living God, the great I Am, get down on his knees and wrap a towel around his waist and wash the dirty feet of his apostles? John 13, 3 through 5 tells us, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He knew who he was. He knew he had nothing to lose. He would not be diminished in the least. He knew who he was, where he came from, where he was going, what God was doing in his life. So he washed his disciples' feet. We know we are loved by God. We know God saved us through Jesus, that we'll spend eternity with him. We get to dwell with that clear river and the tree of life. So guess what? We can serve too. What the prophet Jeremiah 17, 7 and 8 said is true. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. I hope 2025 is not a year of drought in your life and in my life. It may be. I don't know what challenges it's going to bring physically, financially, relationally. I don't know. But every year seems to bring them, though. But I do know that we can flourish this year because of this stream, that river that flows right down the center of our lives and brings continual refreshment and assures us of our hope in Jesus. So let's flourish in 2025.